tell you, but I think you will understand our apology because we have been to the house because it was a question day to the president today, so we wouldn't dare leave the house so until it is finished. So we really, really apologize for the inconvenience that we have done. But you know that you do understand the protocol. Yeah. Our agenda today is too short in the sense that we were expecting to have two items. The presentation briefing by the NHBRC board on the issues around the Auditor General's annual audit, as well as the briefing by the department on the excessive utilization of the consultants by the department, as it is one of the concerns of the committee. So the DG has requested yesterday, he was here to a meeting, and he requested that we move this, we defer this item for the other day because they are busy today preparing for a meeting for tomorrow with the National Treasury. They have to present the National Sanitation Household program to the National Treasury. So, and we'll recall that in our joint session with the Standing Committee, they were given a mandate to meet these three departments, and they never met in our last meeting. Honorable Mkhalapo was there. So they were given a mandate to say they must meet. The DGs must meet. So it's that meeting that the DG is attending tomorrow. So he was preparing for that meeting today. So I felt that, you know, it would be unfair if we don't release him because it is on our agenda as this portfolio committee. So let's release the DG to go ahead and make sure that when they make a presentation to the National Treasury, at least it's a well-prepared document. Then the other issue is around the... So it means those are two. But let me... Put on another one. What do we... So, Honourable Members, let me introduce Mr. Xolile Nyathela. Am I right? Mxolisi Nyathela. As you are aware that we have been complaining, I think it's almost 2 years or 3 years I was fighting for this committee to have a second committee secretary. Now Mr. Nyathela has been officially delegated to this portfolio committee to be second hand. So I don't think that we'll have a problem of the old reports that are not adopted because of the minutes and so on and so on that have been taking time. So you are more than welcome, Mr. Nyathela. The other issue, I want to put an apology for the whip, Honorable Sosibo. Honorable Sosibo has got a problem. His sister is sick, very sick. So even this morning when we're in the bus, there should be a message. Children are calling if that he must come home. Things are bad. She's mentally ill. So you can just think of that situation. So that is why she's not with us this evening. So those are that apology I must put forward. I don't know if Kolisa do have some other apologies.
Good evening. I only have two apologies. That is they're sending one for Mom Duncan, who's sick, and also also received one from Mom Dakone this afternoon. She's also not joining us today.
Okay. Can we just introduce ourselves so that the members from the department as well as NHPRC to introduce themselves? Can I start with you, Honourable Bowman?
Good afternoon. I'm Gloria Bowman, member of the committee.
Ma Kosavana Njobe, member of the committee. Thank you.
I'm Steven Simukhalapa, member of the committee.
Katama Valastone.
Thank you, Chief. Neville Cheney, National Department of Human Settlements, DDG responsible for strategy and planning.
Good afternoon. I'm Jeffrey Mahash. I'm the acting CEO of the NHPRC. And may I also, Honorable Chair, extend an apology from the chairperson of the council. She was involved in the interviews the whole day for the CEO, and unfortunately she missed her flight when she had to come through to this session.
Madam Chair, it's Courtney Thorpe. I'm the CFO of the NHPRC.
Good afternoon, I'm Jackie Fager, Stakeholder Relations, NHPRC.
Sean Solomon, National Department.
Good afternoon, Nilila Khaba, Assistant to the Director General of the Department of Human Settlement.
Good afternoon, I'm Muhabbi Lilosa, Head of Quality Assurance, Department of Human Settlements.
Michael from the Independent Newspapers. Independent Newspapers.
Sebo Mapoti from PMG.
Someone. you to this particular slide, committee members, to look at the regulatory part of the NHPRC, just as a brief breakdown of what is it that we do in terms of our mandate. Our mandate is in two parts. One is the regulatory part, and the other one is the housing consumer protection part. From the regulatory part, I just need to illustrate here that we need to ensure that every builder that is building a house is registered with the NHPRC. So that's actually the registration of the builders. We are also then involved with the training of all builders, that every builder that is actually registered with the NHPRC must be trained and be able to understand the technical standards of the NHPRC. So every builder that is actually registered will be eligible for free training by the NHPRC. And every registered builder must then adhere to the relevant technical and ethical standards of the NHPRC, which are stipulated in our home building manual. Right. Should a home builder default or not comply with the relevant technical standards, then we can actually deal with that builder through a disciplinary process whereby we either suspend the builder or we deregister that home builder. Right. And finally, obviously, if a home builder is no longer active, he's got a choice of either voluntary withdrawing from the NHPRC. So that is from the regulatory part. So when we look at some of the information that was actually reported through the Auditor General, it's actually reporting in terms of how we reported our performance information, and I'll highlight some of these issues in the next slides. From the housing consumer protection side, right, how do we ensure then that we protect the housing consumer? Every single house must be enrolled with the NHPRC. Prior to construction, every house must actually be enrolled. And then once the house is enrolled, we have to inspect that house. So I'm now looking at going clockwise on this particular slide. So every house that is enrolled must actually be inspected, and for the non-subsidy sector, we ensure that there are four inspections that are conducted. For the subsidy sector, we ensure then that we provide at least one inspector for every 200 houses that are under construction. And when a house has been completed, an occupation certificate is issued by the municipality, and that's when the warranty cover starts, which is then post-construction, the 5-year structural warranty starts. In terms of any complaints, inevitably, if there are any complaints with regards to the structure of the house, the housing consumer is entitled to complain and lodge a complaint to the NHPRC. Then it's the NHPRC, if a home builder is not willing or is not able to actually deal with the complaint, we have a conciliation process between the home builder and the housing consumer. And if the home builder is not willing to fix that, the NHPRC would actually ensure and engage an engineer as well as a remedial contractor to ensure that the remedial work has been done. And then if the home builder is not willing to do so, we can ensure then that we recover the money from the home builder. So these two slides here actually talk to the regulatory part of the NHPRC as well as the housing consumer protection side. So from the NHPRC perspective, then what we report now in terms of our annual report is the performance information with regards to the regulatory part as well as the protection side. If I then skip through the slides and then go through the operational performance as reported in the annual report. In terms of the registration of home builders, we see that over the, and we try to project this over the last 5-7 years, and we see that we have had a constant renewal of home builders over the last 5-7 years. A constant renewal of about 77% of all the active home builders have been renewing their membership. And in terms of enrollments, we actually saw quite a big dip during the recession when 2006-2007, we had a very high number of enrollments in the order of about 90,000, and they went down all the way to about 30,000 during the last financial year. And we are starting to see actually a growth in those things, in those areas. So one of the concerns that was actually raised now by the Auditor General, if I have to come through that now, is to say, then the Auditor General had a query in terms of say, your performance information, right, in terms of the number of registered home builders, in terms of the number of late enrollments, which is not adhered to some of the where to be registered. So our performance information would give in and say that we are going to register 12,000 home builders in the financial year. And if we do not get 12,000 and by any chance we get 11,999, it means that we have actually not met our target. And if we get 12,000 registered builders, we have met our target. If we go 12,001, it means that we've exceeded the target. So that was one of the concerns with when the Auditor General says that of all the targets that we put in place, we did not achieve more than 25% of our targets. And then our argument was then to say then that from that 25%, as the NHBRC, we cannot control how many builders must be registered in a financial year and how many houses must be enrolled in a financial year. We cannot go out into the street and say, now, because our target is 12,000, so all these builders here, please come through and make sure that you are actually registered with the NHBRC. But moving forward, what we have done now is that we have now changed our strategy. We are no longer reporting in terms of the number of registered builders. We are now actually reporting and saying, if a home builder comes through to the NHBRC, what is our turnaround time in order to ensure that that builder is registered within an acceptable time frame? If a home builder comes through and wants to enroll a property, what is actually our turnaround time to address the enrollment? So instead of us targeting in terms of number of registered builders, in terms of the number of enrollments, we are actually saying we should be customer-centric in terms of our turnaround times. And then in terms of the complaints that we actually received, I just give here a snapshot of the number of complaints that have been provided. In terms of the year, we received more than 431 structural-related complaints, and roof-related complaints, 36, and in total, we had 649 complaints that we received. Of the 649 complaints that we received, we only closed 350, which means that there was a shortfall of about 300 complaints that we did not resolve. And what we did at the end of the last financial year is that we then took all the outstanding complaints, and ever since now, we've closed all the remaining 300 complaints. From the remedial works point of view, I think if we look at the last 5 years, the remedial works that we've been spending at the NHBRC, 2007-2008, we spent about $4 million, and the last financial year we spent $15 million. In what we've also been arguing, because again the question was, are we spending too little money in terms of doing remedial works? But we didn't say, when you look at remedial works, you don't look at remedial works in isolation to the mitigating circumstances, the mitigating costs that we have put in place in order to ensure then that we actually reduce the remedial cost. So if we look at the inspection fees that we spent in the last 5 years, in 2007-2008, we did spend $4 million rands in remedial works, but we spent about $59 million in inspection costs. And in the last financial year, we spent $15 million in remedial costs, and the inspection fees actually went up to about $74 million. So again, what we argued there was to say that when you are looking at remedial costs, it is not a question of you looking at remedial costs without looking at how much did we spend in actually mitigating that cost, which is $74 million. From a disciplinary of home builders point of view, the number of disciplinary hearings that we had in the last financial year was 87, and of the 87 DC hearings that we had, 46 home builders were actually found guilty. And the number of builders that were not found guilty were actually 7, and the matters that were postponed to the new financial year is only 2. Matters that were withdrawn were only 13. In the subsidy sector, let's look at our performance in the subsidy sector. Again, I'm going to highlight the chart that shows actually our performance in the subsidy sector. The subsidy sector, we enroll them in two phases. One is the project enrollment, and the other is the home enrollment. Project enrollment is where you have only put the infrastructure and you have not yet dealt with the top structure. And the home enrollment is when you are actually looking at the enrollment of the house, the enrollment of the top structure. And if we look at the performance over the last 4 years, we see that the home enrollments we've been average about 70,000 units. But then subsequent to our engagement now with the departments, and I would want to report that, I mean, over the last year or so, we have actually been engaging a lot with the provincial departments, and we are getting very good support. So from the last financial year, we actually see that in the previous year, 2010-11, we had 72,000 houses that we home enrolled, and that shot up from 72,000 to 138,000. And what has actually happened is now that we are now trying to, moving forward, we are now trying to align all our home enrollments with the plans of the National Department of Settlements. So again, here, we believe then that we actually performed very well. So most of our targets that we did not actually achieve were related to this, to the non-subsidy sector as opposed to the subsidy sector. Right. From an inspection point of view, and again, we see that we on average, we did actually more than the four inspections that we actually recorded. Right. The one target that we did not meet, right, which we need to emphasize this particular year, and we are putting a lot of focus on that, is actually the home builders training. What we trained is emerging home builders. We actually only trained 609. Disability program, we had about 18. The women build with 134, and the youth build 94. And the youth in human settlements was 95. In total, 951. Our target was to train about 3,500. What we have done now in this financial year is that we've actually now enhanced our training program. We have employed a number of service providers to ensure then that we will be in a position to meet the target of training the youth and the women in particular in this current financial year. The challenges that we dealt with in the year 2011-12 is then that number one challenge that we had is the enrollment submissions that were still being done during, if not after construction, particularly in the subsidy sector. Yes, we've seen a jump from 70,000 to 138,000, but the challenge that is still there is that the enrollments are not submitted to us before construction commences. And if a submission is done before construction commences, it does not give us an opportunity to actually go and do the inspections. There's still a lot of misunderstanding of technical and geotechnical standards in the developers and the professionals. And what we have done is then that in moving again in this financial year, we are having a number of workshops in the provinces. I think we've done quite a number of workshops ever since in order to ensure then that all the provincial departments understand the technical and geotechnical standards. We are also still being faced with the scarcity of appropriate technical skills, and what we have done is that we are actually now busy developing our own training manuals. We are also busy training inspectors, not only for the NHPRC, but for the municipalities as well as for the developers. We are also developing appropriate standards for the rural projects, because the jump that we saw from 70,000 units to 138,000 units were mainly for those houses that are either PHP houses or the rural projects. And what we've now done is actually now developed the appropriate standards in order for us to ensure then that we do enroll the rural projects. Jefferson, what I need to do at the moment, I think the one critical issue that we actually raised by the Auditor General is actually with regard to irregular expenditure. And I'll actually give the CFO to actually address the financial part of it so that you can highlight what were those irregular expenditures. I don't know, I don't know if you want to take any questions before we get into the financials.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm also going to go through a little bit of history, and then I'm going to go into the major issues as I get to the slides, bringing up and highlighting where the AG was not too happy, or they had a few concerns about the following year and how we're going to handle areas of concern. Basically, the NHBRC, just to tell you that our income for the year was 741 million, expenditure was 580,134, was down 228 million on the prior year. That looks bad, but if you explain, I'll explain later what actually went on there. If you look at the premium written, the NHBRC actually wrote premiums or enrollments of 426 million rand. Last year, it was only 322, so we were 28% up. Where whenever AG comes into it, when you get to the changes in the unearned premium and unexpired risk provisions, there was a concern that really, see, the provision went up by 199 million. Concern by the AG at the time is that what are we doing about the subsidy in the sector? In that we are using the same kind of assumptions for the subsidy and the non-subsidy per sector. It's a little bit concerned, you know, actuarial, should we not be basing the subsidy provisions on some basis? But as of the end of the financial year, we hadn't received one claim as yet in the subsidy market. So we applied a 20% failure rate, and the concern was because of the volume and increasing volumes, we should re-look at our assumptions. So in the next financial year, one of the concerns of what we should be providing for the subsidy market for possible future claims and the way we reserve it, we are going to have to address in the next financial year. There's no model overseas or anywhere else we can go to. South Africa has its own RDP program and its own subsidy housing, and we really can't benchmark it against anywhere else in the world. But I think now we are starting, as the NHPRC becomes more known, we are starting to receive claims in the subsidy market, which now give us a far better trend for going forward. The revenue contribution in the technical side was a little bit of a concern, and the Minister and the Department of Human Settlements brought that up and said, listen, you cannot, you have to basically, you can't rectify units if you are actually the, but the regulator. So effectively what's happened now, we are now moving out of that rectification in the KZN area and the Eastern Cape, and we're ceding all those contracts back to the actual province. So the technical revenue going forward will only address the forensics and the geotech, and we are at the moment ceding those contracts back, but to the department. And that is one area that he was concerned about. When we get to the investment income, you notice that the investment income is down. Concern raised by the AG and in our report is that our investment policy has not been approved by the Minister of Finance. The Department of Human Settlements and our Minister, Tokos Kwali, has written to with the Minister of Finance asking for the exemption under the Treasury regulation. And as of today, we still haven't got it. They're saying that we cannot keep investing until the National Treasury answers us. But we have had a lot of talks with the National Treasury, and they said they will be giving us a decision on the investments in the next few weeks. And then, unfortunately, we can't change investments until we get clearance from the Department of Finance. Expenditure patterns have been in line. The expenditure patterns right through our expenditure, we have reduced expenditure. The only part that came, as I mentioned earlier, was technical income, where the technical income and the tech expenses actually balanced each other out. The provisions I have been through, in that we have to address the subsidy area in the following year. The other thing in the claims, another issue is one of the concerns brought about our claims for the year was only 15 million rand, and with the reversal of the technical provisions of 10 million rand, we only show an actual expense of 5 in the books. The general feeling is that why is your claim so low? It's not that our claims are so low. We actually mitigate our claims by spending nearly 97 million to 100 million on inspections. So one thing has to look at this graph in relation to the inspections that we do and where we put all our, where we spend all of our money. So it's not about having low claims or high claims. It's about if we had to stop the inspections and we did not mitigate our risk, we would save money on the inspections, and the claims then would be far, would be we managed to explain to them that either you live with the lower claims and you spend a lot of money on the inspections, or you cut the inspections. And inspections are important to actually stop the house being constructed and make sure that it is actually rectified before people but move into the homes. There's the technical expenses, just to show you, while being through that, you see that the actual income, 184, against the actual expenditure of 186, we made a slight loss of 3 million, but next year you'll see a major change, as I discussed earlier. Looking at the reconciliation from the budget to actual, you'll see that the NHBRC, with all the budget adjustments, actually budget to make 258 million and we actually made 327, and then we have these actuarial reserves of 194, which shows we only made 134 million. But the SD itself, without the provisions, which is just journal entries, actually made 327 million for the year. The actual report at March, I've been through this already, the concerns, our reserves at the moment should be 976 million rand. We actually cover that at 1.5% in our investment but strategy. But I'm also reminding the committee we are still waiting for the Minister of Finance's authorization to continue in this way of investing. The enrollment fee adequacy, it shows that we were adequate. The Auditor General had no actual problem about this, except for the issue that he just wants to make sure that going forward we address the claims ratio for the non-subsidy market. We are 278% overfunded, so the NHBRC is in a very strong financial position. Now, if we go to the actual audit report, the NHBRC received a qualified audit relating to its procurement processes. And there is two types of expenditure. There is fruitless and wasteful, and there is irregular. The irregular expenditure means that the expenditure was actually made. It was properly, the expenditure was made, and it was not but fruitless. We actually got money for value. But the process in order to, how we awarded that, those tenders were irregular. Let's look at the four areas that the Auditor General actually brought up. The first one was the extension to contracts. Now, we did extend with the contracts. They were done in the normal procurement process, but what the NHBRC failed to do was notify National Treasury. So we felt we didn't follow the Treasury regulation. That was the one reason for the irregular expenditure. Now we have put that in place, and every time we have an extension, we're now following with the National Treasury regulations. And if we have extension with the contracts, we are notifying the National Treasury. The second area is that we allowed payments to go through a miscellaneous payment account and not go through the procurement system. If you looked at the relationship, certain contracts were awarded, and they were awarded outside of the mandate of the then CEO. So effectively, what we've done now is that we don't make any more miscellaneous payments. Everything goes to the procurement system, and we will not pay anything outside of the procurement system. So that has been tightened up 100%. If you looked at the actual audit, it said the Auditor General was unable to establish if we had procured goods between 5,000 and 500,000 through the actual procurement system, and if there was any irregular expenditure in that area. We declared all the irregular expenditure. They found one extra item, which then raised their concern. If they found one, how many more but there were. You are aware that the NHBRC, it has been going through a difficult time with its current computer systems, and we have now embarked upon upgrading our computer system. And at the time, we did have a manual procedure in order to ensure that all amounts between 5,000 rand and 500,000 went through the proper quote system. For argument's sake, one, you had to get three quotes. Two, once you've got the quotes, you have to do a technical evaluation of the people who have given you the quotes, but the suppliers. Three, you have to then apply the 90-10 or the 80-20 rules. And the documentation in that area was computer-based, but it failed in a lot of areas that we could not produce reports. What we have done now, we have put in a complete manual system, and we're still trying to use the computer system, that every single quote that goes to the NHBRC now is done on in a register where every quote is logged, all the quotes are recorded, the BEE, the ECI score card is worked out, the 80-20 is calculated, the 90-10 if it's applicable, but it's also calculated. And so what we've done since the beginning of the year, and our internal audit has gone and actually checked this to make sure that all those systems are there and they are being checked and they are being monitored, so the Auditor General should not find that a problem in the following year. The last area where we fell foul is that we ran our tenders, but we ran the tenders for under 21 days. In other words, the tenders were not open for a full 21 days. We'd run a tender and our closing date would be but 16 days. We were not following the 21-day rule. There were a lot of reasons for it. They were actually contrary to the Treasury regulations. That's all been changed, and all tenders are now remain open for a maximum for the required period of 21 days. Those four issues in our note 24.2 in the financial statements were the reasonable cause of the irregular expenditure. They said it was irregular in its procurement process. It was not wasteful expenditure. Madam Chair, hopefully that was the big, and that led to the actual qualification. I believe that this year, with all the additional manual systems we have actually put in until we get the new ERP system up and running, we should be able to address this, and we should not get a qualification in the following year. It's out of order. I just want to say that in the conclusion, the solvency of the NHBRC at the moment is 370% overfunded. Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, I was stuttering, but I just couldn't get the words out today.
Okay. No, thank you very much. You mean to say you were not aware of the Treasury regulations? No, don't respond. Okay, I have still questions. Because I think as an institution, you should know the Treasury regulations. But you acted outside the Treasury regulations. So I think let me give the members to interact. Honourable Bowman, Honourable Steve, Honourable Stoller, for now.
Thank you very much. Look, it's, you know, nobody likes to have to face a committee with a report like this from the AG. I want to also just let me say, broadly speaking, as we've been out there on the ground, we are finding that NHBRC don't seem to be really doing the job of the inspections at different levels. And it concerns me, I think we want to see very little in remedial work. That budget must begin to fall away. Because as I'm understanding it, if you've got inspections at different levels, so that foundation gets laid, you inspect it, it's fine, you now come with your next structure. Now, it would seem, and we've only got the people on the ground that we're talking to, and I think they're a pretty good indicator of what's happening, that is not happening. So I don't know how you begin to control that. So that expense we need to see coming down. And then I think this thing about the 21 day, following the 21 day rule, and coming in short of that, I think that's a serious thing, because, you know, this is where if we, and the whole thing about the treasury regulations and everything, this is where the corruption begins to creep in. I'm not accusing you of anything, but I'm saying you're opening up yourself to things like that, and we just have in the housing side, we've just got to start cleaning up the thing with poor quality housing, and it starts with bad inspections, and that is really your core business. So, and I'd also like, Chair, to know the relationship now of our quality control controller in the department with NHBRC. What is that relationship? And it is of concern to me also that we're not enrolling everybody with NHBRC, you know. And I think somehow there needs to be a proper mechanism put in place, and I think particularly with our subsidy housing. Let me just leave, you know, it at that, and I'll pick up on the second round, what's left.
Thanks, Chair. I think definitely the committee, we are quite concerned about the qualified report. And we would say, and I would put it blindly, that, you know, the NHBRC is failing the poor consumers. I don't think that you are following on your mandate and on what you need to be doing. As a core mandate is for you to do regular inspections and to ensure quality. And that is not happening at the moment. And you can see by the number of complaints that we have received, it's quite extensively high. And I would say it might be a conservative figure, because of there should be more. What we're seeing on the ground is contrary to what's happening here. And when we talk to people there, the problem is more. And I have to agree with Honorable Bowman. We don't want to see this thing of remedial. I think it's a waste of money here. I always concerned that it's a fruitless and wasteful expenditure, this amount of money. We could be using it to do something better rather than on the remedial. Because the question is, why do we have remedial work if we do inspections? So by virtue of us not doing inspections, that means remedial work will necessarily follow suit. So definitely you are failing on that front. Yes, you are registering quite a lot of things. But you see, I had to say you cannot go out on the streets and tell people to register, but that is your part of your mandate. You are not seen on the ground. People don't know whether NHBRC is there and what is it doing. And you need to be grounded, because of, I think, the way you operate at the moment, you are not known. When we talk to people on the ground and they say, no, we don't know who NHBRC is and what is it doing and everything. So I think you need to rephrase that strategy, that you need to go out on the street and make sure that you register, but also you do inspections, but also you market and make sure that people know about you and and your services that you offer. And this disciplinary hearings, what type of ill discipline are we talking about? Because I see builders found guilty of what, and, you know, can you just highlight us on the disciplinaries to just tell us what happened? And the CFO, you know, you didn't tell us why did you incur the 231 million irregular expenditure. Where was it? And you tried to say you will make sure that in the next financial year it doesn't happen. But the problem is, just like your mother department, you are serial offenders in as far as supply chain management is concerned, and that is a problem, and as well as IT management as well. So I need the reassurance that you will be working on the supply chain, because our mother department is next to having a qualified report. If they don't get their house in order, they say they will get a qualified report. They are closer to the rent. So, and part of the problem the AG raised was this supply chain management. And definitely you are not doing enough to address that problem. But you need to improve in as far as quality inspections is concerned and quality assurance. And you need to be grounded on the ground so that people know that you are there and they can run to you. And I think be preoccupied more with inspections. I would love to see the report that says inspections, more inspections, more inspections. Because that's the only way you're going to address this issue of shoddy workmanship. And what are you doing with those contractors who do, you know, shoddy workmanship? Because they get away, at times they get recycled somewhere else. And that is not good enough. So you need to make sure that you focus mainly on making sure that inspections are happening and qualities are short to, you know, especially in the RDP housing, because of most of these atrocities happens there in the RDP houses. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, mine is on training of home builders and training of provincial and municipal inspectors. What I want to find out, when did they train those home builders and which provinces? If they can give us a breakdown per provinces and this, and the municipalities. And the other one, Chair, is that one of the public sectors that have been trained for technical standard. When? And where the sectors have been trained. And the last one, Chair, is on the delay in the finalization of the disciplinary hearing of CEO. What caused the delay? The impact that was caused by the delay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Lastly, I'm partly covered, particularly by Honorable Mokgalapa, but I will just add to some of the points, to at least two of the points he has raised there. I noticed on the slide where you are showing us your remedial works, the costs for remedial work as compared to inspection fees. To me, the difference is so big, the gap is so big, I don't understand. Except to say, maybe generally, one understands that the inspection will be done by some kind of experts who know their work, and therefore, I don't know, but still, you know, if you do remedial work for 4 million and then the inspection costs 58 million, I'm just wondering whether that is how we should be spending our money, really. Is it necessary to spend so much on inspection? Why? On the question of the builders, I would also want to know whether, you see, Mr. Mokgalapa says maybe it's because you're not visible on the ground. I think I also feel like that, but I was wondering whether you do make any effort to make yourself visible on the ground so that you can have as many of the builders in the country registered with you as possible, so that we can be sure that we are maintaining, you know, the required standards by as many builders as is possible. I would even use the word recruit. Would that be out of order if, for instance, knowing that they are builders, then they find a way of actually attracting them towards you so that they get registered. With regard to the training, Chairperson, I'm curious to know what criteria is used to identify the builders to be trained. Yeah, how do builders get to know that you have some training programs? Would it only be through newspapers, newspaper advertisements only?
I'm thinking in particular of those in the rural areas, you see, whether you are making any effort to reach them so that they can also participate. Yeah. Now you have your disciplinary, disciplinary of home builders. That's the headline. found guilty, not found guilty. what do you do with those who are found guilty, for example? Does it just end there that they have been found guilty? And it seems to me, compared with the number of hearings that were done, the number of builders found guilty quite large. What does this suggest about the builders under your organization? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Sorry, I thought these might have been picked up, but I just want to add, in the Auditor General has picked up here that the entity is still struggling to collect certain old debts. What are you putting in place in that regard, and what is the amount of that outstanding debt? Are you collecting any of it in? The other thing I would like to know, and I started to allude to this, he's referred to your ineffective internal audit unit. What are you putting in place now by way of control that is going to act like an audit and risk? Do you have that? Do you have an audit and risk committee, for example? Are those committees in place that can assist? So I think it's very important. I think that's what will come out of the Treasury's regulation, because that's what you do need to have. But maybe you've already put it in place. And I think we need to start now to see, in relation to the auditor's report, the progress that you're going to be making in putting some of this right.
Okay, thank you very much. I think the issue of non-visibility, you should take it seriously. Because we have been to the Eastern Cape in July, and we have been in OR Tambo. What we found there is that you only have two inspectors for the district. Our question is, how many projects does that region alone or district have? How many projects? So these two people, how are they going to make it? There are projects running at KSD. Others are running at Mozahir. And they are not, they are coming up simultaneously. How do you expect those people to manage to inspect those projects? The OR has got 5 municipalities. The other one is in the east, other one is in the north, other one. So you must take this seriously. And at the same time, the issue of the builders, the recruitment, members were talking about the recruitment. I don't want to say what you were saying, to say you're unable to go to the street. How do you market yourselves? Because those builders, some of them, they don't know about the NHBRC. They come to know about NHBRC when they get tenders from government. Now, even that process is delaying the emerging contractors to get into the market. So it's good that you are visible, you have a strategy of awareness in the local municipalities directly. There are these new young people, they are registering their contracts, but they are not coming up from the ground because they are not assisted by anyone. I think you are the people who have got to assist them in terms of understanding. But there is an NHBRC, they have to register so that by the time they are ready to get to tender processes. Now people just go and get these certificates and then they go for tendering, and then the department, because they've got a certificate, they did not get into extensive training. I think that your training, there should be, your strategy should get to the pre Afumani tender. So in a, if you don't have Afumani tender, then you say, we're going to deduct so much from your what. So you must be proactive to say you are here to develop. This is that you are going to contribute to a developmental agenda. So Nina, you are not contributing to that agenda per se. You know? So your strategy now, you should look at it to contribute into a developmental agenda. To say those young people now, they've got contracts. So definitely, I mean, they've registered to get a definitely, they want to get to the industry. What are you doing in the NHVRC to ensure that those people, they get into the industry, they're well, I mean, empowered? Never mind, why you mess up? Because what happens when my son gets a certificate to say no, they will go there and mess up with the certificate. So you need to be open minded. Then the other issue is the issue of the. I want to know what are you doing with the Northwest Naledi local municipality remedial work. What are you doing with it? You are the country. You are the country. You have to go and do the remedial work there. Never, didn't you tell them? Maybe we'll recall that, but yeah, I remember the Eastern Cape, but I'm not sure about the area. But the Naledi area, in the Naledi local municipality, you have got 405 units that you have to rectify out of your own money. Then the system, this ERP system, you will recall that last year you came before the portfolio committee and you came up with a complicated story to say this system, you paid so much and then the system is not working. And I think I read through your report, your annual report. I found that that system, as it was so expensive, you changed it again because it could not work. Now you are saying you have got another system. So it means that is a wasteful expenditure. That is waste. How can you get to a system that is not tested and then when you get that system, it does not work? So I hope that you are convincing us that the system you have now, it's working. It has, that one even had the national security issues. The one you reported last time, what is even wired. So I think those issues, you need to take careful of them. And then the Auditor General, I think the Auditor General's report is clear. It talks to regress from being to from qualified to an unqualified. I think your report is not good. The way you are relating, Nina, you are relating so simple. Your report from the Auditor General is not good. It's very, very bad. You have got reds or reds. So don't take it so light. This is very serious. This is very serious. The issue of finding out proper internal controls to prevent incurring irregular expenditure as a result of non-compliance with supply chain management. This is critical. So that is why I'm saying don't take it so light. I want to say for you, and I present, you willy-willy. No, it's not a willy-willy. This is serious. As well as in, there were no adequate controls in place to ensure that this irregular expenditure incurred is completely detected and disclosed in the financial misstatement. That is not light. You don't take it light. You don't have to. It's even worse, you did not have the proper monthly reconciliation record. So I'm trying to say, your report is bad. It's bad. The Auditor General came to us and reported this. So I'm trying to say, don't take things light. And even the issue, we don't know, but this is not your line. That is why we wanted the board. The board is full of Padela, Gendava, Pasiyu. But it's not your responsibility. The board, we still want the board before us. We want to know what is the status of the case of the where the investigations were done, were they completed. So we want all that information. And then what cost? Because cost them money. So we need to know. So that is why I'm saying it brought to Saifunek. And then on yourselves, on your side, you say the draft of the Amendment Act is completed. When did you complete it? I think never. It's going to be form part of the workshop because next day it has to come. We have been longing for this amendment to this Act of the Consumer Protection. So can you just respond where you have to respond?
Madam Chair, some of the issues that we raised are actually more comments which we take cognizance of, and some of the more questions we shall try and answer those questions. The one issue that was spoken about is the enrollment of houses, and what we have done is that we are working very closely with National Department of Human Settlements. So we actually obtain all the plans from the provinces, and we align and ensure them that our statistical figures are in line with the provincial Department of Human Settlements. So it's ensuring that every single house, as per the provincial department's plan, is actually enrolled. But I think we are actually getting there, and we have engaged with all the provinces, and with the exception of Northern Cape, that we are meeting in a week's time. So we have engaged with them, and they are actually enrolling those houses. Then an issue which was raised around the remedial works. Yes, the remedial works, you will inevitably have remedial works. Remedial works are actually caused through one of the three possibilities. It can either be caused by materials, or it can be due to workmanship, or it can be due to design. An inspector will not be able to pick up a design problem, but estimate how much have we actually spent, which is the 4 million that was being spoken about, 4 million vis-a-vis the 58 million. We are saying we have spent 4 million to do the actual remedial works. But the 58 million is what we put in to mitigate the risk, to ensure that we do not incur remedial works we have got to inspect. And we spent 58 million to do that. But then the question is 58 million or 90 million of inspection cost, is it very high? Now, if you look at how many inspectors are required, we are actually busy now in the process of recruiting a lot more. As I'm sure, yes, there might have been few inspectors on the ground, but we are actually targeting to have close to 400 inspectors on the ground. Now, if in the subsidy sector, our intention is that for every 200 houses under construction, we provide one inspector. Now, if you've got 80,000 houses under construction at the same time, it means that you require 400 inspectors. 400 inspectors at a salary of 200,000 per annum, that already gives you 80 million, just on salaries of inspectors. So to me, when I look at 58 million or I look at 50 or 70 million that was spent on inspections, if we actually require to have more inspectors on the ground, that cost is going to be high anyway.
The NHBRC is not in a profit-making business. Now, if you record around 700 million that you have collected in the previous year, surely you should use that portion for inspections. So it can never be that you would cry resources and money while you've got 700 million in the bank, pumping back into the inspectors.
Sure, I'm not crying about that. I was only highlighting to the honourable member. It says 58 million. Is too much. So I'm saying no, it's not actually too much. I'm trying to justify where it comes from. And I'm saying the more we actually have to hire more inspectors, it will actually be higher than the 58 million. So maybe next time we come here, I might be reporting 120 million on inspection costs because we would have hired more inspectors. That's what I'm justifying. All right. Then when it comes to disciplinary hearings, I think the question was, what do we do with those? Most of the disciplinary hearings are due to technical non-compliance. Technical non-compliance, it means that the builder is not building according to the standards. So we get there and we say, builder, you have done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 wrong, please fix that according to our standards. And if he doesn't fix that, we take him for a disciplinary hearing. And so it's in general, that's shoddy workmanship. So if it does shoddy workmanship, we then take it. So the numbers that we quoted are those who were actually not complying in accordance to our standards. Or it might also be administrative non-compliance. And administrative non-compliance means that builder did not enroll the property, but is building. We can also take him on disciplinary hearing. So those are the builders that we do take on task.
What punitive measures do you put in? Do you blacklist them? What happens after you found them guilty?
There are a number of charges. One, depending on the issue, it could be technical or administrative. It could be a struck off the register, which means then that you will not be able to actually practice. There is also a charge of at least the penalty fee that you have got to actually do a fine. I think in the current legislation, it's actually 20,000 rand. It might be too little because it was in the legislation, which was legislated 1999. Right? So in the repeal of the Act, those are some of the punitive measures that we're actually looking and trying to review. Right? Or it can be suspended from actually practicing in the onboarding industry. Right? The issue around training, I think, in the annual report. I don't know if honourable member has got the copy of the annual report. The provincial breakdown is actually provided in the annual report. If you want me to go through that one. Right. But it's on page 44 of the annual report. You can actually go and see the provincial breakdown of who and where did we do the training on those numbers. training that we actually do, we try and do an on-site training as well as in-class training. So what we do is that we work very closely with the provincial department and the municipalities. The provincial department would actually go and identify for us. Right. So when we go and we issue technical non-compliance, the technical non-compliance would inform us to say, this builder is not competent in doing plastering. This builder is not competent in doing roofing. Through that, they will then identify and say, these builders here, they need to be trained more in plastering. Through identifying them on site, through non-compliances. But to also get some of the list, we engage the province of the municipalities and they identify them on our behalf, and then we provide them on-site training and in some cases, classroom training. Okay, then registration of builders. Right? When I was talking really of picking on in the street, probably it was not really the right way of using it literally. Right? But I think the essence of what I was trying to say is that, I mean, if you've got a number, right, we can beat that number by trying to identify a builder from the streets. But I take note in terms of our visibility, but what we are doing also in terms of visibility is that we do have offices in the 9 provinces. We also have satellite offices. We are also trying to investigate now the possibilities of having mobile offices. Right? And then those mobile offices will be able to reach out in a number of these areas. And we are also looking at the possibility of using municipalities as service centers. Right, so that builders and everyone else can go and be registered in those areas. So we are actually looking at a number of those options in terms of our visibility. Right. And in terms of registration also of contractors, what we have been doing when we're engaging with the departments is that we've been asking for a list of not only the contractors, but we want to register also the subcontractors. Because it is also through the registration of subcontractors that they will be eligible for training with the NHBRC and therefore the growth of those subcontractors. So that tomorrow is not also a subcontractor, but it can be a main contractor. So we are now looking at going there. Where there's a construction, we look at the main contractor and we ask for the list of all the subcontractors and we assist all the subcontractors to be registered with the NHBRC. Yeah. The Northwest, Madam Chair, we are going to investigate. We are in the process of that. No, I'm saying it has been given to our attention, but we are in the process of actually basically making sure then that the necessary issue has been addressed. Right. The comment you made about the ERP, when we came here last year, Madam, we were actually saying that we are going to start implementing. So at that time there, we were in the process. So we are now in the process of implementing the new ERP system. So it's not like that system now has failed again. But we're just reporting at that time that be aware that we are now implementing a new system. We are now in the phase where we are actually implementing that system. The data's collection, I think most of our data are actually from the government, from the provinces. But I'm also glad to say that in this financial year, most of the provinces are actually paying us within the 30 to 90 day period. So we are no longer having that as a big challenge at all. So we are getting good cooperation from the provincial departments. Is there anything else that I left out? You can do that.
Madam Chair, pardon me, the 30 to 90 days, you say? Where does that come from? It's a 30-day payment?
It should be a 30 days. Right, but obviously, from last year, I think we used to have data of the order of more than 120 days. But it has now come down to 30 to 90 days. But I can assure you that, I mean, a lot of provinces are trying to make it within 30 days. But we still have a few that will probably be within 30 to 90 days.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me pick up the other thing. I think we really do take, and we apologize to the committee for our performance as it comes to the qualification. I also have to bring to the committee's attention that you must realize that some of those contracts have run over into this next financial year, and there will be an irregular expenditure note in next year's financials. Might not be qualified, but they are contracts that were irregular in the prior year, and as long as that contract runs and the report is stopped, they will continue reporting it as an irregular expenditure because it's irregular, the process of awarding was irregular. So in the next year's financials, you will see an irregular expenditure amount, but as long as we declare it, the Auditor General will qualify on it. The qualification came about the process in order to determine that future irregular expenditure will not happen. We can't make excuses for that. It is detailed in the notes, the disciplinary action taken against individuals concerned. It's not a finger point exercise, but we do take it very seriously, and I just have to warn, just make the committee aware that that note will be there in the next financials. What we have to prove to the auditors that we have done everything in our power, that we will have not created any new irregular expenditure, and that is what we have to do. If we did stop those contracts because they were officially awarded, those people unfortunately could actually sue the NHBRC, and then we'd have a major problem. Because there's nothing wrong with the contract, there's nothing wrong with the work, it's just people exceeded the authority. So I have to make that point. The second thing, the audit and risk the committee, that is fully established. We have a full committee with the in terms of the Act. We've got external members, and they are it's an audit and a risk committee put together, all new members who are very who are really pushing us and making sure that I'm looking at the accounts, looking at the tenders, the tender committee, or now it's called new, the adjudication committee is looking at the other two committees, which is the specification committee and the evaluation committee. They've all been established and they are operating proper minutes, and it's not done airy-fairy. That is, all those committees are in place. As far as external audit is concerned, internal audit is concerned, the council did one of the irregular expenditures last year. You see it was, we had an external internal audit department, and that did not work. The council have now appointed internal and hired internal auditors that are working for the NHBRC, which is to our advantage because these people have the knowledge now and they know the business. Internal auditors really don't know but your business. So you find the internal audits, there's a lot of internal audit going on now, and they are, I believe they're doing a sterling job, and the management are being kept on their toes. To go about, to pick up the other area about the remedials and the inspectorate, we will present our next year's budget to you. You will see it, and you'll see that we've created two new departments. Quality Assurance Department has been opened. The Central Control Department, where all inspectors will report to, and all work is detailed through a central department or the provinces. So there's a central control with a central manager. All houses, whether subsidy or non-subsidy, are controlled to make sure that every inspector is allocated his workload through the PDA, and it's not left to all the provinces working in their own silos. So a new department has been opened. You see in our next year's budget. It's in the next year's budget and has added a few extra costs. The other big thing that we have done, you asked what are we getting ourselves in suit and how are we sorting out our borders. In next year's budget, we've opened up, it's already in process, we've opened up a legal and enforcement section. It has been budgeted for, where we are putting prosecutors and lawyers into every department to work with the department and to ensure that we have got prosecutors. Not a long delay in coming to head office. We are putting legal into every department to ensure that we can stop the poor quality work. Spoorman, I think on the other side is the Dr. Mahaji has brought up the outstanding debtors. We only have one little amount outstanding which we are addressing. I think I'll just pick up your questions. Madam Chair, we really do take it seriously. It wasn't but a flippant thing. But unfortunately, we are going to have the irregular expenditure note the next year until but the contract's end. There's nothing we can do about that. But nothing new will come onto that list. I hope I've answered all the questions. I hope I haven't missed any.
I just need to add one thing. are placing our own staff members who will be working from the provincial department of human settlements offices. So our inspectors will be operating from their offices. So that when you say that this project here was not inspected, the HOD has got immediate access to the quality assurer who is working in their own office and ensuring that all those houses are actually inspected. And we have actually started the rollout in all those provinces and deploying our staff to the provinces.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. There's just something that I would like to be clear about before we conclude our discussion. I've been looking through the presentation, but the presentation is silent, for instance, on what we see in the annual report on paragraph 24, where it speaks about fruitless and wasteful expenditure and irregular expenditure. Personally, I would really like your comment on that, particularly on the paragraph 24.1, which says, although there was some fruitless and wasteful expenditure, but the council deliberated and condoned this expenditure. You see, for us, we would like to know the reasons why the council condoned the expenditure. You see, the reasons for that. I think that would help us a great deal, because otherwise it remains a big question in our minds. Here's fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Council condoned it, but we don't know the reasons why the council would condone it. And then, of course, if you could also comment on paragraph 24.2 about the irregular expenditure, because for me, that sum, 201 million, is quite a lot. We can't just leave it to go like that. In spite of the fact that NHRC is solvent, but still, you know, we want to find out what happened here. And the question of the CEO, you do mention it here in the presentation, that this question has not yet been settled and therefore it is delaying, I think, certain processes. But can you have some comments on that paragraph 24.1.2 and so on?
Thank you, Chair. Look, we are going to have an opportunity when you come again, you know, with your annual report. Can I just perhaps make a suggestion here? You know, it's all very well to come with this presentation in answer to what the Auditor General has pulled out, and I think it speaks also to what the Honourable Member here has just raised. I would like to see you take the Auditor General's report, the comments, specifically, take them out of the context of this big presentation we had here tonight, and tell us how you're dealing with that and what progress you're making, so that we've got a tabulated thing, so with the Auditor General is speaking about a specific thing here. Not to say that you're dealing with it that doesn't help us. We need to be able to come back and see, okay, exactly how much money you've collected. And we don't want to come here and then find at the end of it, when we come with all our little blocks at the bottom from the Auditor General, and it's no progress, no improvement, no improvement, no improvement, no improvement. But if you give us a proper tabulated thing with how you see yourself rectifying what has been picked up, that will help us, and maybe that could be presented to us like that when the board comes before us, if we could perhaps ask the department to arrange that for us.
Why we invited the chairperson is because the accounting, executive accounting, is the board. So when we refer to the Auditor General,
will send that even to the department. We don't want anybody else. We want the minister, not the DG, to talk about the Auditor General's reports. So that is why. Because that list, Honorable Men has got in her position, is exactly nothing that has been translated by the committee. It's exactly the document that was presented to the portfolio committee. So, line item, there are comments and there are recommendations that were done. So that's why it was said. Then an internalized initiative was power. It's not, it's serious there in that report that we have been given by the auditor. All of us have got that, a copy of those. So that is why we are saying it is important when you come back, don't say we are rectifying, Line item, energy purpose green circle, 1, 2, 3, 4. Because your report is bad. Very bad. Can you tell the reds there? Tell them the reds. Or not the reds. On the yes. Yeah. No, the last one. The last one. I want this part. No, don't give them. No, I'm not going to give it to them. I want to. They've got it. We're not going to give them ours. But I want to fight a good. Where is the thing, man? The other one. Where there's Department of Human Settlements, and then there's the NHBRC, and then there's red. Oh, you left it. Alright, okay, you left. But I'm trying to say, this AG's report, it spells everything. So we have to go take a line by line item when you come back. You know, never.
Thanks, Chair. Just to inform the committee, the document, if I stand corrected, that's the audit outcomes for the human settlement sector, which the AG had presented. Which all the provincial departments, we presented that to Technical Minmec, we presented that to Minmec, and the minister requested that the chairperson. So I would assume that what we'll do is, as requested, come back with the audit action plan in relation to all those issues, because I think all the entities are there. If you see all the entities, there were two entities that had achieved. It was the HDA, and I think it was the NHFC, the NHBRC. But the NHBRC was a qualification in respect of that. So there is that, and I think what we can do is that just arrange for Dr. Marchi together, or the board chair has been a representative of the accounting authority to present that. And then we also, I think, in relation to Member Njobe's point around the question of a clear articulation of what that 201 million rand in respect of irregular expenditure entails. You know, what was the amounts and what was the respective reasons for that. So it was procurement. That information we can make available, or we'll request the NHBRC to do that.
Yeah, I think, ma'am, so we will provide the action plan. I think Honourable Member at some point spoke about the Audit and Risk Committee, of which we do have an Audit and Risk Committee, and they've requested that we actually report line by line action plan to the Audit and Risk Committee. So the same type of document is already available, so we can actually provide it to this committee. We also report to them on a quarterly basis on our progress with regards to all the issues that we raised by the AG. So for your comfort, it is there, and you can actually provide that document.
Thank you very much. I think the meeting has come to the end. I thank you for your time, and you must pick up at least. And it's not necessary to say you have got money. Money must be used. Should be used, but appropriately.
Okay, thank you very much, Honourable Members. The meeting is adjourned. So, Bonana next week, Wednesday. I'll put my statement.
Oh, what is I saying?
There is an invitation for, where is the